I think we're past the 10:30. If you are here to hear House File 680, that has been removed from the agenda, and we will not be hearing it today. So I wanted everyone to know about that. We don't have a quorum. We're going to start with the update from the file technology and medical genomics, and people will be coming in as we have a lot of things going on today, so I apologize. For my members who are being a little tardy. Did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering when 680.
Might be.
Well, I was wondering about that too. Is it Marika?
Yes,
that Tuesday. Oh, that Tuesday. Thanks for I know. I'm just wondering when 680 will be. What the plan was for that? Perhaps you sent it out in Sternfield, but I didn't catch it.
No, I did not bring it up. It will be brought up later. I don't have a date for it.
Okay, thank you. That's a good idea.
Oh, hopefully it'll get out of the committee. We have to deal with a few things on it. Dr. Weben, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chairman Mahoney. It's a pleasure to be here.
And thank you for being here. Could you please begin, and Mr. Taylor?
Mark Taylor. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman and those members that are here.
We got about three.
My name is Mark Taylor. I'm the Assistant Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota, and along with my colleague Eric Weben, co-director of the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics. Before we go on, I'd like to point out that in the audience we have Chair of the University of Minnesota Board of Regents, Regent Simmons, is here. So I want to thank her for coming. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for having us here to give you an update on the progress of the partnership. As we hope to show you, this partnership between the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic has been very successful in its short existence, and the future is bright. To recap, since the partnership received its initial pilot funding in fiscal year 04, we have been involved in four different categories of activities, all related to biotechnology, medical genomics research. These have fallen in the category of individual research projects performed by faculty from the two institutions, infrastructure investments, some investment in commercialization of our discoveries, and recruitment of scientific talent to work in the teams that we've formed between the two institutions.
So just to give you a brief update without belaboring the details on things, we have, as Dr. Paller said, been funding a significant number of important research projects. And the category of these projects is that each one of them involves an investigator from Mayo working with an investigator from the University of Minnesota, so these truly are collaborative projects. And over the next few slides, you'll just see some of the highlights of the areas that we've been addressing with some of this joint collaborative research. So in the first cycle of funding, using the appropriation from 2004, we took off to undertake some of the major problems affecting human health in the state and across the country, namely cancer, Alzheimer's disease, obesity, and heart disease. Those projects were quite successful, and be happy to talk more about those if you'd like. With the appropriation from 2005, we moved a bit more into cancer drug discovery, an effort to try to develop new drugs there, some studies of other neuromuscular diseases, moving into the genetics of some other common diseases like TB, susceptibility, autoimmune disease, kidney transplantation, and addiction, and we funded another study on the early detection of cardiovascular disease. With the dollars appropriated in 2006, we moved into the area of nanotechnology, trying to develop new nanotechnology-based drugs for cancer therapy, made some further investments in research in the area of Alzheimer's disease, funded a study on developing new biomarkers for colon cancer, therapy for heart failure, did a study on HIV, and a study that's designed to develop new treatments for dermatitis. And lastly, in 2007, with those dollars, we've continued our efforts in the area of cancer, moved into epilepsy, some approaches for gene therapy for cardiomyopathy, antifungal therapy, and some diagnostic instrument grants that we've been working on. In the latest round of partnership grants, again, you see the theme of cancer therapy being continued, some gene therapy approaches for degenerative muscular disease, more investments in the area of cardiovascular disease, and some biotherapy. And additionally, not listed here is a really interesting study from the 2007 dollars that also moved us into the area of agricultural biotech, where the investigators have recently reported the development of a new drug that is effective, at least in laboratory proof-of-principle experiments, in killing soybean aphids and is completely non-toxic to people. So that idea and that potential drug is going into further development as we speak. So we have been broadening our portfolio even beyond the area of human health, which is our focus, to do things where we feel we can have an impact that will make a difference for Minnesota and have an impact in the area of economic development as well. So our goal is really to continue to try to be a life-saving economic engine.
This research needs to take place in advanced research facilities and using cutting-edge equipment. And so when we started the partnership, we were fortunate to have just received funding from the legislature to build the McGuire Translational Research Facility, which is shown on the left, and with the initial partnership funding from the state, we were able to add three floors to the Stabile building on the Mayo campus, which is shown in the slide on the right. And so now we have state-of-the-art facilities. And I should also mention, obviously, the new biomedical research facilities that are being constructed on the university campus will be home for teams that that work on partnership projects. These projects would not be possible if we didn't have advanced instrumentation and advanced technologies. And so we've also invested in infrastructure, carefully planned, so that we're not duplicating technology on both campuses, but that where possible we invest in cutting-edge technology and place it on either the Rochester site or the University of Minnesota Twin Cities site. In 2005, we invested in some projects that were related to genomics, proteomics, structural biology, the production of therapeutic proteins, and bioinformatics. All to serve multiple projects performed under the aegis of the partnership, as well as other research taking place at either the Mayo Clinic or the University of Minnesota. In 2006, we made additional investments in genomics, bioinformatics, and a particular piece of equipment for obesity research, an NMR machine. And in 2008, we funded, again, genomics, neuroimaging, bioinformatics, and structural biology equipment. And as I also suggested, to complete the package of being able to do this very advanced research, we've been performing a limited number of paired recruits. So recruiting faculty to both the university and Mayo Clinic, people who would work together on joint projects but would also round out teams that we have at either institution. And so we've authorized and completed the first two of these three sets of recruits. The first one is in cancer experimental therapeutics, and we hired one faculty member, a professor in X-ray crystallography, and another one who is an expert in DNA damage and repair. A second pair of recruits in pharmacogenomics, the last one that's currently authorized and partially completed is in neurosciences related to psychiatry, specifically faculty with expertise in genomics and neuroimaging. To summarize what we've done with the money that we've obtained from the state funds is that approximately $30 million have been allocated to the research projects which we've outlined, $14 million for those infrastructure projects we've outlined, I haven't mentioned yet that we've devoted $1 million to commercializing some results of one of our first projects to complete the scientific portfolio to make it an effective license. That happens to be a discovery related to prostate cancer. And $11 million is allocated for recruiting scientific talent. This $56 million includes $2 million that was our initial match for the pilot funds, a million from each of the two institutions, but does not include an additional $5 million that we were able to leverage from the Medica Foundation. And those $5 million were used to fund research projects and infrastructure similar to what was outlined on the list I showed you.
On that topic of leverage funding, we do think it's very significant that the dollars that have been appropriated by the state have been used to help us obtain some additional funding for partnership endeavors from other sources. That total is now $39 million, which is made up of $19 million in external grant funding, including an $8 million grant for imaging infrastructure for building shared facilities, again, that can be used by all the investigators at both institutions to further our scientific agendas. We've had an additional $15 million in philanthropy based on donor interest in the activities of the partnership and how can they advance some of that agenda. And as Dr. Paller already mentioned, we had a $5 million donation from the Medica Foundation, which went to support additional research projects and infrastructure in addition to those directly funded by the state. I'd like to point out, I guess, at this point, that we're still very early in the partnership history and that the dollars that the legislature appropriated in 2005 were used to fund projects that actually began in 2006 because we go through a fairly complicated proposal application and review process, which has included bringing in investigators from all over the country to help us pick the best and most competitive projects. So there is a delay between the time the funding is given and the time we start any funding. So that first real round of projects was really only funded in February of 2006. So by that timeline, we're really just beginning year four of partnership activities. Now from that, we've already had 134 peer-reviewed manuscripts, which is an expression of some of the progress and activity that the partnership has been able to stimulate in the scientific arena. And that's the first place where we expect to see the progress being manifested from this state investment. The economic development in businesses and licensing take a little bit longer to develop. We've also had 105 scientific presentations, six patent applications, and that's about 20 times the national average for this type of research expenditure. Dr. Powell, you want to comment further on the intellectual property and commercialization progress?
Well, we've had one licensing agreement that's been completed, one project which I alluded to is transitioning to commercialization, and we've used funds to develop that. This is a slide that we showed when we first proposed formation of the partnership, which shows the timeline for development of intellectual property. And box one is really the area, discovery, where the partnership has been active. So to develop concepts, actually develop data, to obtain additional outside funding, such as NIH funding, to allow us to be able to complete the initial research. And as Dr. Weaven suggested, we're at about year four for the partnership. The traditional timeline, and we hope to make this much shorter than 15 to 20 years, but the traditional timeline between an initial discovery and something being in the marketplace is 15 to 20 years. And most of those other boxes beyond the initial phase of two, where we would protect our intellectual property and license it or start up a company with it, really depends on forces in the private sector and to the extent that the state regulatory environment and supportive environment helps that. But those are largely things that are not under the control of either the Mayo Clinic or the University of Minnesota. And so we've continued to do our part, as we suggested. We're at least six times the national average for generating patentable IP with this research. And the other thing, this slide doesn't really show up very well. I do have a handout, but it's probably very small print anyway. I'll just summarize what it's meant to demonstrate.
Do you work on optical
we're going to have to, but this has to be related to human health. So unless your eyes are harmed, I don't think we could fund it with the partnership money. AUTUM is the Association of University Technology Managers. It's the national organization for our commercialization offices, and every year they do a summary. And the last complete summary suggested that in terms of active licenses or new disclosures or a number of criteria, the University of Minnesota was number six, and shown in the blue, which is just five ranks down, and number 11 is the Mayo Clinic. So these are treated individually. So we have the commercialization power of two in the top 11 institutions working together. And it's going to take a little while for the discoveries to work their way through the pipeline, but we do have a track record. And I just want to close our presentation with the hope for the future. We obviously plan to continue doing the same kind of work we've been doing, assuming we continue to be generously funded as we have been. But we want to suggest that in the future, when the economy is in a position to support it, that we feel that the time is right to really expand our activities. And we have done a significant amount of initial planning to think of what could we do as institutions working together to really make a major change in a particular chronic disease. And so over a 10-year time frame, we think that we have the potential to end Alzheimer's disease, eliminate diabetes and obesity, or significantly address the health burden of heart failure if we're able to continue and grow the partnership. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Weaven and Dr. Paylor. You know, the committee is generally pretty good at asking questions, but I'm going to jump in first. I've been reminded by my crack staff that we have a quorum, and I know that Representative Pepin has... Committee's in order. And Representative Pepin has really looked at the minutes and would like to move them. All those in favor of any corrections or changes? All those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. And we have a group of students from Vector Investment Transition Program, and welcome to the committee. Hopefully you will see your government in action today and learn something. But back to the genomics partnership. Couple of things here. With your 10-year timeline, how does your patent protection and licensing agreements work with that 10-year timeline? If you discover something today and you don't bring it to market for 10 years, what's your protection after that? Either or.
Mr. Chair, we'll patent the discovery as soon as it's disclosed and as soon as we're able to. And that time frame is a historical time frame. It's certainly not optimal or what we're striving for. And so we'll obviously do everything we can to shorten the time frame. The patent protection is generally 17, 20 years on these discoveries, so there is some time. We obviously will do everything on our end to shorten that. But it, as you know, on the follow receiving end has to be funding, so venture capital or angel funding and all the rest. And so it requires, you know, it all depends what the status is in terms of the availability and companies to take these projects on. I should mention that since we started, Vice President Tim Mulcahy from the University of Minnesota, Vice President for Research, is here. And so if we have any questions regarding commercialization activities at the university, I'd be happy to defer to him.
Well, thank you. I've got a couple other things that you spoke of 105 scientific presentations. Could you just elaborate where and what comes of those?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. These are presentations that are given usually at national or international scientific meetings by the investigators and represent the first formal presentation of novel research results. So these are the first step in the announcement of new research results to the community. And again, exactly where those would be and what the nature of those meetings would be would depend upon the specific focus of the research. So cardiovascular disease things would typically come as meetings with the American Heart Association or other such groups like that.
And, you know, and I don't want to hear and I don't want to create a ton of work for you, but it'd be really fun to kind of see or interesting and informative for members to see where some of those presentations... where the Mayo U of M genomic partnership is getting press, something like that. And you can share it with the committee at your leisure or send it to the CA, my CA, and she'll pass it along. But I think that would be interesting to know for us if we're being mentioned in Beijing or Sydney or Bangalore or any of those other places. And then one last question, if both of you could address this. How are you partnering with the Hormel Institute? I want to steal Representative Poppy's thunder here. And if you could just elaborate a little bit on if you are partnering and how you are doing so.
Mr. Chair, I'll take the first stab at that, and then we'll turn it over to Dr. Power. And I'd like to note that that's a break with longstanding condition, which is a difficult question, so we still have Dr. Power first. But the Hormel Institute, as a campus of the University of Minnesota in a formal sense, has been an active partner in Minnesota partnership activities. We've funded two or three projects involving investigators at Hormel, including that APID study that I mentioned previously. That was a study in directed drug design, and Dr. Pang from Hormel, Dr. Pang from Mayo played an active role in partnering with the Hormel Institute to make that work go forward. They also have significant resources with the Blue Gene computer at Hormel that was purchased with some additional funding outside the partnership. And that resource is being made available for partnership activities too, particularly in this area of rational drug design and protein folding prediction. So it's been a real key partner in trying to move the partnership agenda forward.
Just to add, there was another research project that was funded, Dr. Dong at the Hormel and Dr. Peng at the Mayo, to work on cancer therapeutic agents. So, again, we don't treat Hormel differently. It's part of the university, and so any researchers there are able to qualify for funding.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're going to try and steal your thunder back. All right.
I am.
I'm sure it's related to this, so Representative Poppy.
I apologize for being late, and thank you. I represent Austin, and I'm proud to represent the Hormel Institute, and I appreciate that you once again reminded the people of this committee that we have the hidden gem, which is no longer as hidden as it once was, and your committee came down, I believe it was last year or 2 years ago, and took the tour of what was then the Hormel Institute. I would invite you to come back and see the Hormel Institute as it has been totally refurbished, and it's a gorgeous building, and it's much more amenable to good research that has been happening for many, many years. But it's a very beautiful building now, and it's welcome to come back and see it. And thank you for mentioning the Hormel Institute.
Well, Representative Poppy, it's a very, very nice building, but even better, it does really good research, and more natural cures for cancer is through foods and food-related research. So it's a great piece, a great third leg to this stool. And I apologize for missing the grand opening, but I think I was either very, very ill or they had me up high someplace working. Representative Pepin, you had a question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Paller, I was noticing the slide on partnership allocation from state funds, and I'm wondering if you could talk just a little bit more, the $1 million for commercialization, and then maybe you talked about it, I just missed it, but the more importantly, the recruitment of scientific talent. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more. Is that salaries, or is that, if you could just talk about how, I'm just curious how that money is spent.
Sure. Representative Pepin, thank you. The commercialization money was, so the research projects are peer-reviewed projects. They have to have important scientific questions that are being asked and will be answered in the time frame of the grant that has to do with a diagnosis, cure, or prevention of human disease. So those are our research projects. Out of one of those research projects came some findings related to genomics of cancer that wasn't quite ready to be licensed because the companies that would license it thought it needed some more data. At that point in time, it was no longer an interesting scientific question, but clearly important to get from here to there. And so as part of our original plan, we devoted $1 million to do some more experiments that were related to providing additional data and more robust data that would make the discovery something that would be closer to commercialization. And the recruitments, these are startup packages that we fund, and they must be matched by institutional funds, okay? So we do these in pairs, so we'll hire at least two senior faculty, an associate or full professor. Now, they may bring along with them some additional staff, some postdoctoral fellows, et cetera. They may need some startup equipment, things like that. And so the startup package is used to do that. The there are no long-term funds in terms of salary support or whatnot that the partnership is funding. We'll support some of the initial 1 or 2 years worth of salary match, but the rest becomes the obligation of the institution, which would be either the university or Mayo Clinic. And of course, the hope is that these are very talented and successful people, and so that they will become relatively self-supporting with outside grants from NIH or National Science Foundation.
Thank you.
Representative Barnett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doctors, I'm wondering if you might comment. I'm looking at your intellectual property product pipeline and wondering about how you might be connected to the BioBusiness Alliance and their strategic vision for Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, thank you for the question. It's a really important question from the context of the partnership. We have not only formed a more formal alliance between the Minnesota Partnership Leadership and the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota, but we have cross-representation from the Steering Committee for the Partnership and the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota Board of Directors. So I sit on the BioBusiness Board of Directors, so does Dr. Mulcahy behind me. Dr. Mulcahy also sits on the Partnership Steering Committee. So we work very closely together. Our goals are to promote coherence and sustainability of state initiatives in support of building a biotech economy. And we feel that by working together, we can actually increase the ability of the state to be competitive on the world stage rather than being competitive within the state. And so far, I think there's ample reason to believe we're being quite successful with that.
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I got in trouble with my neighbor because he spells your last name almost similar, and he says, no, it's the guy down the block, and I call him Mueller, and he goes, no. So you keep throwing me curves here.
That's right. My dad actually spells it differently than me. I'm charting my own course here.
Doctors, I have a couple questions on, it's actually in two separate areas, and the first is on the relationship on this commercialization. You guys are obviously involved in picking the research that you're doing, so you're picking some projects that have promise going forward, and I assume you must be, I guess maybe I should ask, are you out there talking to the people who are looking at it from a commercial perspective to say this is one that has commercial project prospects, or if it's just research for research's sake?
Yeah, Representative, the process for the research projects is to first undergo peer scientific review to make sure that the question being asked is an appropriate one and the methods that are going to be used are appropriate. But we've done something very different for the partnership, which is after that we have our two technology commercialization offices look over the list that the ones that we think we're going to be able to fund and going down the list a few more projects and ask them to do a review based on commercialization likelihood. So they'll do some due diligence and see, is this something that's likely to be a product? Is it likely to receive funding? Is it likely to stay in Minnesota? All those questions that those offices would ask. And then based on that, we'll change the final list a small amount. So we never go to the bottom of the list scientifically, but when there are ties or when it's close, we'll use the commercialization potential as the deciding or the tiebreaker so that we're cognizant of that fact.
All right, Mr. Chair. Follow up on that then. Those people that you're talking to find out whether there is commercial potential, I heard in, I think, Dr. Pollard's testimony that angel investment issues and trying to recruit the people who can be that commercial business side of things is a little weaker in our state than it probably needs to be. What are you doing, or what should we be doing to help recruit new people into that, you know, the backside of that role, to get those investors and those commercializers here in Minnesota?
Representative, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, can I ask Vice President Mulcahy to join us?
Please do. Dr. Mulcahy, welcome to the committee. You know you never get out of here without having to speak on the record. Chair Mahoney, I feel I'm going to keep coming back till I get it right, so I appreciate the opportunity. It's a great question that you've asked, and one of the challenges that we do have in the state of Minnesota is access to really tried and true business savvy talent, particularly for early startup companies. You know, the coasts are very attractive because there's funding there, so people tend to migrate there. But one of the things that we're doing at the university that's helping a great deal is in our Carlson School of Management, for example, we have a venture center which actually is intended to train students in the area of venture capital to help them understand that role, to see a niche there. So we're trying to provide some training there. But one of the other things that we've done at the university, which has actually been a very good success for us, is we've implemented a process in our commercialization office, in our Office of Technology Commercialization, of a CEO in residence. And what we have is about four or five tried and true CEOs who are between companies, their last company sold or went private. And what we've done with them for a very small contract, we've actually arranged to have them resident in-house, and they contribute to the evaluation of the technology potential to some extent to augment our internal expertise, which, by the way, we've substantially improved in the last 3 years. But in addition, when an opportunity arises that looks very promising, we have ready access to relevant CEOs who might be interested in working with us very early in the formation of that company. So although in general there is a challenge in this regard statewide, what we've done is actually manipulated a system which will allow us to have what I would call easier access or more direct access to that kind of talent. The other thing we've done is we've created a program which we refer to as Innovation by Design. And what this is a course, a program where we involve students of different kinds of background to come together in a partnership with university faculty, some of our corporate representatives, business and industry, around a key, a critical area of technology development, with the idea of what can we do. The task or assignment to the group is figure out what we can do in an area where we can have an impact, with a commercialization focus as kind of the target. And so these students get firsthand experience and exposure to well-trained management expertise in the early formation of companies. So we're doing a lot of things to begin to grow our own, but I would say more importantly and relevant to the partnership and the university specifically, we've actually brought in-house the expertise so that they can help us very quickly and be accessible when we need them.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I have another topic, if that's all right.
In just a moment, because I wanted to inform the committee that we have the high school pages here with us today also, and they're learning all the good things that we do here. So thank you for joining us, and hopefully you'll pick up a few pointers as you run for your next office.
Mr. Chair, I actually have one of my constituents. Well, he's not yet able to vote for me, I don't think, Brian Larson here, who is was here, and I have a meeting with him on Thursday, and he's going to tell me what I should be doing up here, which I and that'll be helpful. Gentlemen, the other topic I wanted to address with you, if I could just briefly, is, and I note that we have one of our regents sitting here who's been in my office and has heard this question as part of the interviewing process for that. I'm concerned about whether we're trying to attract the right level of researcher to Minnesota. Seems like all the big name colleges are trying to attract the big name researcher who can bring in a floor of postdoctoral students and fellows to research. And we need to do that too, I assume, in order to compete. But I think we also need to be on that mid-level range, the people who have the idea that might be the next big thing. Can you tell me, is that an approach that's workable in the real world, or is that just the new first-year legislator thinking that's a great idea?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Oberle, I think that's a very important point, and I can speak beyond just the level of the partnership discussions here. For the partnership positions, we have been trying to focus not just on trying to hire the most expensive star power researchers, but to try to identify people at midpoint in career who have been successful, so we don't have doubts about their future success, but who have the potential to develop into the next star power researcher with the additional support that we can offer them with the partnership startup package, with the institutional resources that get dedicated to these positions, and with the extra ability to network and collaborate that comes from the partnership interactions between these two research institutions, both of which on a national and international scale are very competitive for grant dollars, prestige positions on journal editorial boards, and other things. So I think if you look at the academic power of these two institutions separately, each of them is quite significant and makes a real impact on the area of biomedical research. When we join those two together, it becomes a really attractive package, which is helping us recruit really top-level people with particular promise.
Representative Obermiller, if I could just add to that, and I would call your constituent, Mr. Larson's, attention to this. That's two very insightful questions you've asked this morning, so when he is ready to vote, he ought to be aware of that. The key thing that you raised is an excellent point. And one of the things that we really try to do in an institution like the University of Minnesota, and I'm assuming it's the same in Mayo, is you really need a continuum of talent through the pipeline. You want people who are coming into their own. You want the person with the next breakthrough idea, as you suggested. And you need that senior mentor to also help guide their development. So it's a tricky a process to try to get the right mixture. The thing I would just add to what Dr. Wieben just talked about is what we're trying to do at Minnesota is identify the best quality talent. And so I don't think our focus is as much on exactly where you are in your career progression. It's an important consideration. But the most important consideration is getting that great talent. And so I really think that's the thing I would emphasize. But having that as a backdrop, you do have to look at how you can field a team and be sure you've got all the bases covered.
I'm going to jump in here and use the prerogative of the chair. One of the, and this is really for Dr. Mulcahy, you get out to the coast, and in their big technology economic development areas, you can find a block of lawyers, business execs, accountants, whatever, that understand whether it's the IT or the biopharma or the biomedical devices or whatever. And professors, they're wonderful human beings, probably the great parents and all the other things, wonderful humanitarians. They're not very good business people, as I understand in the stories I've heard. Is the Carleton School of Business, outside of the executive in residence, is there a plan to start developing, or are they developing that? And then to add on to that particular question, I've had a couple of the small startups, technology-based startups, trying to find bankers. And the really nice thing is I got a couple of small banks on my side of town that, I got their constituents, were one of the bankers there, and I got to connect them up and say, these are companies that are looking for a couple, three-year commitment to a banker so they don't have to train them again. Are you working with the banks to kind of help them understand this particular process? Because this is a newfangled business for Minnesota, so to speak.
Representative Mahoney, there are multiple questions in there that I'll see if my memory can recall them all. First of all, one of the things I would point out is that the coasts are optimally organized in a way to attract these new startup companies. And those of us in the Midwest, and it's not simply Minnesota, are going to have to really cooperate and be very planful in order to be competitive. We have to get their attention. When we get their attention, we usually have quite a bit to offer here, but there's so much going on the coast that it's hard to get their attention. So that's number one. Number two, I wouldn't want to suggest that I know in depth the full academic array that is offered at the Carleton School, but I can tell you that they do indeed offer this kind of background and experience for students who are interested in pursuing that track, that professional track. As is true in any academic program, students select those areas that they want to concentrate on. And, I don't want to say that a CEO of a startup company is a niche career, but it's a high-risk career in many cases. It takes a lot of experience to be in a position where investors would view you as being credible, so you have to build your way up to it. So the point I'm trying to make there is that I think students, until they actually get a degree, get out in the real world and get some experience, don't necessarily think of being an entrepreneur or CEO of a small company as the first and safest risk to take coming right out of school. So that is involved there. And then when it comes to working with banks and things, I would say that although banks are and investors are critical supportive lifeblood for startup companies, they are but one of many pieces that small startups need to succeed. And we are working as a university with a number of groups, including the partnership, including the BioBusiness Alliance, including the Minnesota High Tech Association, to try to identify resources and provide business resource networks so that new startup companies, when they say, "Where can I find this kind of support?" we can actually direct them to a reliable source. Within the university, when we spin out a startup now, our business plan is specifically to take them by the hand and guide them through the process of identifying funding, banking, and support. So for our startup companies, we're doing much more nurturing directly. But as an institution, we're partnering with a lot of people who share the same concern. That is, Minnesota needs to put all of the tools in the toolbox, and so we're working with all of them to help do that.
Thank you. Representative Norton, did you have a question?
I did, thank you. Actually, I have kind of three separate issues. The first is I did want to pass along, and you've probably heard this, some compliments to the University of Minnesota, first and foremost, and Mayo as well, in the improvements we've heard that have been made with regard to transfer technology and moving things along with patents in the process. We have heard from our venture capitalists and angel investors at our business meetings that that's been a hugely improved area for both of you. So I did want to pass that along and thank you for that. I think we need to do continued work in that area. Secondly, there was an email I received that was embargoed, and I was unable to share it, and then it didn't come out past the embargo. And so I wondered if you had touched on, and I did enter a little late, about the recent announcement from the genomics partnership with regard to, I think it was aphids, and but you might share that, because I do think we often talk about bio and think medical, but this had some different components. So I thought if you would touch on that quickly.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, I mentioned that briefly before you came in, but the idea here, again, is to develop a pesticide that's very effective against soybean aphids and yet is essentially harmless to humans. And that such a pesticide has been identified that works very well in a laboratory setting by partnership investigators from Mayo, working with University of Minnesota investigators, both at the Twin Cities campus and at Hormel, if my memory serves me correctly. And that is now moving into further development to try to take it to some trials to see what additional potential it might have and commercialization potential as well. So I think that is a nice example of how the partnership umbrella covers a wide variety of research that's relevant to the state of Minnesota and our needs.
Thank you. And thirdly, I'd like to address, even though this isn't a finance committee, I would like to address the policy changes that may be put in place, and I'm sure you're aware of the bill that I have.
So it's not a fiscal issue. You're dealing with a policy.
I'm dealing with
right?
the policy.
Okay,
part
thank
of it.
You.
But there is it is a result of the finances that we gave to the University of Mayo through the Genomics Partnership, and that had to do with $3 million worth of cuts that occurred unilaterally. And concerned a number of us on this committee and some other committees in the last biennium. And in order to see that a unilateral decision does not happen again, I put together some language, but I know the University of Minnesota and the partnership have addressed this in some language, and if you would at least share with us what you've done at your end, and I'm going to continue on with my bill at my end, and we'll deal with that. I couldn't wrench it out of the hands of the Higher Education Committee to have it heard today in committee, but I did want to talk about it and have you address that since you were here, if you would please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, we have indeed addressed this prospectively so that there isn't any confusion or difficulties in the future. We have rewritten our affiliation agreement for the partnership to be a little more specific, because now we can anticipate some additional problems such as the one you described, and have specifically eliminated the possibility that unilateral decisions could be made regarding funding or anything else, in addition to which, at the beginning of this year, President Brunich wrote to CEO of Mayo, Glenn Forbes, and stated in writing the same thing, although we've already taken care of it in our affiliation agreement. So I think that we need not worry about it. We don't have any problem with it being in legislation since we already agree with it, but it'll happen either way.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up for...
Representative Norton.
Thank you very much. For future references, one of my frustrations, I'm just going to share it with the committee because this all happened in the interim when folks weren't around, is that there seems to be more communication on an ongoing basis between perhaps the university, and I can't necessarily speak for Mayo because the decision was made unilaterally, with the Senate than the House. And I would just encourage the university and the Genomics Partnership to recall that this is a bicameral and that there are two bodies who have equal, at least we like to believe, and I think work for it.
No, I've always believed the Senate was one step, well, never mind.
No, okay. control. So, you know, when conversations occur, please don't leave the House out of those conversations, and and work with the House, or leave the House out, work with the House and the Senate together. Thank you.
Representative Gottwald, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the presenters. I appreciate the work of what you're doing and recognizing the need for a central research entity like yours in the area of biotechnology, medical genomics. Help me understand, I apologize if you touched on this previously in your presentation, I didn't see it in the materials, but how are you using what you're doing and using it throughout the state of Minnesota? I'm thinking of statewide economic success and recognizing this probably has to be centrally located, it needs to be part of the U of M. What are some things you're doing to take what you're doing and spread it statewide?
The hard question goes to you. We didn't flip a coin, but I got the look. Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, thank you. It's been something we've been very much concerned about and interested in from the very beginning. And as some of you will recall, Dr. Weben and I have done a few road trips over the years to the various corners of the state to be sure that at minimum that we understood what some local needs were, where they would match up with what the partnership is doing, and that we could help them where that's possible. For the specific goals of the partnership, it is a bit of a challenge insofar as we're at this left side of the of this pipeline here, and discovery has to take place with high-tech individuals. It doesn't always have to be in the Twin Cities or in Rochester, okay? So that's quite clear. And we've tried as much as possible to partner with people elsewhere. And obviously, Austin is a smaller city, and we have a great research facility there, and it's been involved in several of our products. Our hope, though, is really that as these things trickle out, so to speak, that they will have more impact on the rest of the state. And again, some of that depends on the rest of the environment. If our startups are able to find a home in Minnesota, clearly small companies can do well, not just in Twin Cities or Rochester, but you know, after we've nurtured and gestated a startup, it becomes a little bit beyond our control. But we're committed to working with all the communities in Minnesota to help them reach their potential insofar as we can participate.
Yeah. And may I follow up on that, Mr. Chairman?
Go right ahead.
It's always easier going second. Representative Gottwald, I think you've touched on one of the really important aspects of the partnership means of trying to accomplish our business for the state of Minnesota. And I think the answer is really wide-ranging, starting from things like the research itself. So we're currently funding a project, for example, to try to develop a gene therapy approach for the treatment of mesothelioma, which is really important on the range. Okay, so the research itself sometimes has important impact for certain levels of the state. I think as we move beyond the research, the other partnerships that have coalesced because of the important focus the partnership has provided for a lot of biotech activities across the state have become really important. So the BioBusiness Alliance, some of these other groups, Life Science Alley, we now, I think, are in a lot more constant communication about what are the statewide goals, what are the aspirations of the community, what are their needs, and how might we be able to work together. I don't think that we yet have developed a lot of working relationships that are heading towards putting a new business in Worthington, for example, where I've been a couple of times to talk about their bioscience development. But I think I understand who the players are, what their needs are, what their backgrounds and strengths are, and how we might be able to bring that some improvements to those situations. I think the last area where we've had an impact is being spokespeople for the state of Minnesota on a broader national and international stage. I just got back from a visit to South Korea where I was being asked about the partnership in Minnesota and talking about some of these initiatives and what's available in Minnesota. Why should we be interested in Minnesota? And now we have the opportunity to talk about some of the assets that are present here and the possibilities that are here for creating new businesses or for moving branches of businesses on an international stage to this state. And I think together that coherence is providing us with a lot higher visibility and opportunity on the world stage than we've ever had before.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Question wasn't meant to put you on the spot at all. I was trying to get my head around how we take the great work of what you're doing and move it either through deed or through whatever avenues so that it actually results in economic progress around the state. And I think you answered that. There's still work to be done on that. By the way, in that mix, I would also include the Science Initiative of Central Minnesota too.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
But thank you,
Representative Hildy. Did you have a question?
No, I didn't, Mr. Chair.
Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is to, I guess, any of the testifiers. You talked a little bit about the relationship between research that is done, the academic research, and the industry environment or the business environment into which that basically has to be launched. And I know that one of the things that the Biobusiness Alliance pointed to is that we're doing moderately well in academic research on medical devices, and we don't. And I guess the first question is: to what extent does research get driven by what's out there and what kind of a strong industry we have versus research being done for its own sake and then doing the best to commercialize that research, if you understand my question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, I'll take the first stab at that, since I'm often charged with helping to set some of our priorities for research, at least in the academic health center. Now, obviously, bioengineering is a mix between something in my domain and something that's in the Institute of Technology. We pay attention to that quite a bit. Certainly at the University of Minnesota, we're a land-grant institution. We recognize our importance, our requirement, so to speak, to meet the needs of the community. So when we set research priorities and areas to work in, we take that into account. We certainly don't ignore the scientific potential, but for example, our major priorities now for biomedical science are in areas of chronic disease that affect us all. So even though there's really interesting science, which is what gets me excited on some days, it's really also the things that will make a difference. So those are not disconnected. With specific regard to biomedical engineering, I think we realized at the university the need to improve things perhaps before the recent report of the Biobusiness Alliance. We have recently set up the Institute for Engineering and Medicine and are growing that. That's a relatively new initiative to really work on developing new devices, et cetera. And so I don't think that message is lost, at least to the university, in terms of the need for us to pay attention to that and continue to grow that as an academic area.
Thank
you very much. I would just follow up. I would be remiss if I didn't first of all comment that, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the Biobusiness Alliance conclusion that we're only of moderate success in that particular space or of moderate relevance to the device industry. Unfortunately, that's how it was conveyed in the press. But if you actually read the Biobusiness Alliance report, in the category of strengths in the medical device area, the University of Minnesota was identified 65 times. In the side of weakness, there was this sense that we weren't as relevant in what we do as the device industry is now. But if you talk to the Biobusiness Alliance folks who wrote the report, they will tell you part of that is because the medical device industry is also on shifting sands. It's changing what it's focused on. So to the extent that the university tracks a little bit with that, there's always going to be some misalignment. But the key thing I would point out to you, as Mark said, in an institution like the University of Minnesota, it's very important that we have a whole array of researchers, people focusing on different
aspects of the research continuum. Those who do the aha discovery moment, for which that discovery was a scientific objective and milestone in and of itself, but for which no one could predict 5 to 10 years down the road how it would be essential to some product development. We need that kind of support. And in fact, I think the academy in general, the university, not just the University of Minnesota, but research universities in general, are changing culture a little bit, because that's in the past been where almost the exclusive focus has been. But if you look nationally, there is a trend, and it's true at Minnesota, that we're moving toward an emphasis in translational research, as the partnership illustrates, which is really research targeting of a specific endpoint of a disease, for example, not necessarily a specific product, but a disease. And we're also recognizing that the academic world plays a key role in product development at companies. So we have an increased focus also on applied research. And what we do is we don't dictate to faculty members where in the continuum they need to perform, because quite frankly they do best when they're working in the area that they feel most comfortable with. But what we are trying to do more effectively with the community, with the folks throughout the state of Minnesota, is align some of our internal priorities with what the needs of the community are, so that instead of telling faculty member X that you have to do this work, we recruit. When we recruit new faculty, we recruit into an area of need. So there's a cultural change occurring at the university level, but I would still come back to say what you want are those folks who are still really pressing discovery for discovery's sake. And I think, as Mark indicated, as a university, I think we recognize a different role now than perhaps the academy has had in the past, and we're really working to change that culture.
From my point of view, if I can just put on my biobusiness hat for a minute, I think the real takeaway from the biobusiness report, from my point of view, is that Minnesota shouldn't take its preeminence in the area of medical devices for granted. Mm-hmm. Not that the university was weak, but that we need to continue to strengthen the academic underpinnings of the medical device industry if we want to maintain our competitive position.
Thank you, Dr.
Mr. Chair, I certainly don't believe that universities should just be pursuing a mission of commercialization exclusively. I think, of course, commercialization in part should be just driven by what new discoveries come up and what can be placed out there. So I do agree with that. And I think it's, but I think it's an important question. I'm glad to hear that the university and all three of you are at least asking the question of, are we doing the right kind of academic R&D work in the medical device industry? I'm not saying it's a particular answer should be the case, but I think it's an important question. I at least think that there's value in that.
Representative Winkler, the comment you made just reminded me of something I should have pointed out. I agree with you completely, by the way, in what you just said. I just thought of a very concrete example to illustrate how the culture of the academy is changing. And we have had a lot of faculty in the university whose research has resulted in, you know, licenses and patents and technology commercialization, and they view that as a very important part of their academic scholarship. But what they told us a couple of years ago is that when it comes time for promotion or merit consideration or tenure, very often those contributions are either not valued or valued less than the publications and scientific. And to that, the university responded very quickly 2 years ago in changing its tenure policy to explicitly acknowledge that development of and commercialization of intellectual property is a valued academic work product that needs to be evaluated in those settings. So I just think it's a very tangible evidence of trying to migrate in the direction that you're suggesting, which I agree with you completely, is something as academies we need to do much more effectively.
Thank you, Mr. Mulcahy. Representative Winkler?
Yeah, just a follow-up on the same piece. My comment would be it's probably it's good to always check back with those people again to see if the change in policy has resulted in a change of reality, too, or at least perception. But the next piece of this is the university is engaged in a commercialization effort. But you have to have an environment in which those companies can be successful. You talked about the CEO and residence program, but there's a whole range of other things, you know, that we as legislators in the state government have to help deal with. And so I don't really know where the line is between the university's mission and the mission of other people. And I'm particularly interested in the question of capital and access to capital, and what perspective you might have on that.
Dr. Pollard?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, we were told that the committee was interested in this, so I looked up the most recent report from BIO, the national organization, and they have a state, I'm sure several of you have seen this, every year they put out a summary of state initiatives related to biotechnology, and they term biotechnology quite broadly. And so it looks at everything, and you can get it on their website, which is just bio.org. Disappointingly, Minnesota is almost not on any of the lists of recent initiatives, whether it's something very narrow like stem cell funding or something very broad like seed capital funds or investment in research parks or on and on. There are about 10 or 12 charts. The two activities that we are on with are the partnership for funding some basic research that's well recognized, and the Biobusiness Alliance in terms of their biobusiness resource network to help companies relocate or solve problems here. But you're quite correct. The environment, as an independent consultant would look at it, is not as strong here for all those other reasons, which are not university or discovery related, but they're business related or economic environment related.
All right. Representative Beard.
I was back on you, but Mr. Chairman, we're what the conversation continues.
All right. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I came in late, and you maybe talked about this, but when you talk about on your slide of new priorities for the partnership and the eliminating diabetes and obesity, I'm just curious about the pig islet research that is being done at the University of, is that something that you're going to be able to put some more money and effort into to try and move that forward?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Potty, well, as hopefully everybody has heard, Richard Schultz has donated $40 million to the university to work on specific projects related to diabetes, and those will go ahead. Those are related to type 1 diabetes. There are more people that are affected by type 2 or adult onset diabetes, and so one of the things that we considered when we were doing our strategic planning for the partnership was really more broadly based than just that. So those activities will continue. But these new priorities that I put up here were a little bit of a introduction to perhaps what we'll be coming back to propose to you at a future time when you're willing to entertain future increases in funding to the partnership, because we certainly can't do these things on the $8 million a year that we will be very grateful for. But that'll just allow us to continue this very baseline level of work, and to really focus on such a major disease like this would really be a major initiative that would be akin to what California's done with regenerative medicine or Texas has talked about in terms of cancer.
Members, any further questions for our testifiers? All right, well, Dr. Pollard, Dr. Wieben, and Mr. Mulcahy, thanks for coming in today and giving us the insight from the perspective of the organization there. Chair Mahoney, any announcements we need for today? Or? All right, members, then we'll meet tomorrow at the regular time. And this meeting's adjourned.